from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
We are halfway home on a Monday. Great to be back with you guys. And we are talking all things Padres and really everything else. I was talking to actually the umpire yesterday at the Tier 1 game. And he knows that I'm on the radio. I don't think he listens much. He was asking me some radio insider questions. And I had to give him some, you know, disappointing answers. Hey, like, is this bit real? Not on our show. But it's like, this bit real? I go, it's not, man. I'm sorry. He was blown away. He goes, my wife's going to be devastated. I go, I get it. I was too when I started in this business. And one of the things we've always tried to do on this show is just to be as authentic as possible. Good, bad, warts and all.
I get a lot of people asking, Woods, does Woods know the questions and take on Woods in advance?
I get that all the time.
Oh, no. There's no chance I would ever...
No, I'm militant.
...ever tell
that.
Him
no.
any of the questions in advance.
Yeah, I'm vigilant about that. On my kids' eyes, I have never once cheated or gotten the answers to take
We've
on
never
Woods.
Made up a don't-do-this story. They're never. All real.
They're all real?
We wouldn't need to. And the Padres are an actual baseball team that plays here in San Diego that we cover. They're not just a bit that we do.
That's exactly
Believe me,
right.
If they were a bit, they'd win more games.
Oh, if it was our story to paint, absolutely. But so I did spend the weekend out in Palm Desert. Went to a resort with my wife. We had a phenomenal time. Again, I want to thank you guys too for last Friday's birthday show. It was epic, Paulie. I watched the M.R. video a dozen times. I love it. I love that I own it. It's mine. He did it for me. He gave me a birthday shout out, the Boomer Esaias. And my dad, Paulie, was actually requesting, is there a way for you to
email
that to him? He wants that.
The Boomer clip.
The Boomer, not M.R. He wants nothing to do with M.R.'s clip. He pretends that it doesn't exist.
Gary loves that Boomer Esaias had mentioned my son's name
he loves
personally.
It. He wants to play it for all his friends down at the golf course, whatever.
Boomer Esiason.
Yeah, look at that. It's my son. It's really cool. So he loved that.
I'll text it to him.
Okay, would you? Thank you. And just thank you guys for making me feel so special. And the listeners. So I wanted to do something in return. I was out and about in Joshua Tree, which was about a 30-minute drive from our resort. But we had time to kill. And we went out to the resort, national park, and we stopped at a little country store. And I wanted to get you guys a treat. And I think I'll make the decision here. Close your eyes. Okay, that's for you. Oh, over here. Come on, numb nuts. Grab it. There you go. Okay, Paulie, here's yours.
Can I open my eyes yet?
You can open your eyes. That's a treat for each of you. A mid-show snack.
Oh, look, Larvette's original worm snacks.
Yeah, those are worm snacks. What's the flavor of them?
Mexican spice.
Mexican spice, Paulie. What about your crickets?
I've got salt and vinegar crickets.
Chapulines?
Yeah. So I got you those.
How exciting.
And I would like to, I want to see you. It brings me great joy.
I really think no, I want to save
these. No. The joy that I would get seeing you enjoy the treats I got you.
I think these are more of a later evening snack. I'll have these tonight when I'm working at Channel 10.
That's fine. Try one now. Though I think you can't.
I'm good.
Just please Try one now. You're going to break my heart.
It was your birthday last week.
Yeah, but it's like
birthday week's over.
But it's like I'm an Italian mom, and I've made you guys. You guys are home from college, and I've made you a meal, and you're refusing me.
Aren't you supposed to take the price tag off when you give a gift?
How much were those?
$3.75.
Oh, mine are only $3.50.
Do you want to trade, Paulie? I'll trade you.
4.3 calories per.
That's it.
Cricket. Oh,
it's a light snack. It's a light snack. Come on, guys.
I'll trade you. These are smaller. No. I'll eat one of those if you eat one of these. They're much smaller.
Yeah,
tiny.
My kids ate them yesterday. They loved them.
I'm good.
So Paulie will not participate.
Kids did not eat
any of
these.
Yeah, they did.
Really?
Yeah, I got I got bacon cheese larvettes, and he loved them. Yeah, they're there. They're for sale. You can eat them. Try it. Try a larvette. Paulie, try a cricket.
I really don't want to.
Come on, please.
They wouldn't sell something at a gas station
if it's not
that
edible.
Wasn't really good for you.
It looks too
real. Because it is real. It's actual crickets.
They are real.
But yeah. I got the one.
There's like flakes. Just
flakes. Ben has got one. That is a larvette. And what's the flavor?
Mexican spice.
All right, here we go.
Not bad.
Yeah, delicious.
Oh, it's got a little insecty aftertaste. But
yeah, which will happen from time to time.
I'm sorry, I just can't. I'd probably have one of his.
Throw yours to Ben. No. He'll do it.
I can see like a head and eyeballs.
He'll do it. You're from Seattle. Don't you guys eat those at like Mariners games? They sell them at Mariners games.
Oh, they did that after I moved away.
Crickets.
These are a
little
bigger. These are crickets.
Crickets. I got you this.
What flavor is this, Ben?
It's a Mexican spice.
Mexican spice. Okay. It's like a little...
Shout out Chula Vista.
There you go.
Let's see. All right, so...
Pop it right open.
Unfortunately, this one doesn't want to open.
Just use your teeth and bite it.
I can't
rip it open.
I got it. It's one of these that's folded over. I was trying to open it the other way. Good radio.
They look like mummified bugs.
They are. That's what they are.
Dried out. Salt and vinegar.
I think Don and Mud did this. Someone, Jeffrey just said, just ate a cricket. He just put that thing in his mouth.
It's like a salt and vinegar potato chip.
Yeah. Good.
Better than the other worm, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought about you guys.
It's fine. Thanks.
And wanted to make sure.
I'd say we're even on the gifts that we got you.
I'd say so.
Paul, if you want to rinse that, well, you didn't try.
You didn't try it.
I wanted to rinse the flavor out, there is ice cream in our freezer, courtesy of JR, our engineer. National Ice Cream Day was yesterday. Just went and checked it out. There's the drumsticks and like the rocket pop. Popsicles,
yeah, like
if anyone wants one of those.
Okay.
But if it's sweet treats you're after, today is also National, and how would you pronounce this word? P-E-N-U-C-H-E.
Penish.
Today is National Panucci Fudge Day.
Panucci?
And I wasn't sure exactly what...
Is it Panucci?
It is Panucci.
Oh,
what Panucci Fudge is.
Panucci.
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 I thought it was Penish.
It's not Penish. It's Panucci.
Pinoche.
Which is basically a fudge. It's not chocolate fudge. It's just the sugar. It's like fudge with just sugar flavored, basically. Ugh, kind of butter and sugar and like a cube. It's like a light brown color. I think I like it, actually.
Pinoche?
So, yeah, Pinucci.
Oh.
Panucci.
Oh, Pinoche fudge.
Yeah.
No Panucci fudge in
I didn't
there,
see
though.
Any Panucci fudge for Panucci Fudge Day. Just ice cream for ice cream day yesterday.
I got the kids, they freaked out. I got them the lollipop with the scorpion in it. You know?
Yeah.
They lost their minds. They stared at it. And they're like, can I eat this? I'm like, yeah, you can eat it. And they're like, what do we do when we get to scorpion? I go, I don't know. I've never done it. I've never seen anybody get to the middle.
How many licks does it take to get to the scorpion?
To get a deadly scorpion bite on your tongue. I know he's dead, but... You never know. So
I'm sure we've done this before, but I guess I'll have to ask again. What's the most odd or strange thing that you've eaten?
Other than the cricket and worms I just had?
Nothing super weird, man. Nothing super out there. Like at a time, I thought it was ostrich, but a lot of people have eaten ostrich. It was delicious. But now I feel bad for eating it years later. I don't feel bad about the cows, though.
Denver, we did Rocky Mountain oysters.
I've had those. Calf fries, we called those.
I mean, the very common thing around here at any sushi place you go to is uni.
Nuts.
Which is the sea urchin, like the very creamy, kind of orange, and it's a delicacy. And I always try to like it. I really do, because it's like, it's expensive. It's the one of the prized things on the menu. But it also, sometimes the texture just gets to me a little bit.
I've had lengua, which is tongue.
Yeah.
And I've had cabeza, which is brain.
Yeah.
I've had those.
And no, cabeza is not brain.
I'm sorry. Cabeza is...
Cabeza is face, actually.
What's brain?
Brain is sudaro?
No. Sudaro? I've never had that.
Which was... cabeza is actually
like the jaw?
The muscles? Inside the face, usually of a cow for beef. And it's great for tacos. I mean, you go to a place like... Tacos El Gordo, you get a good cabeza taco.
I worked in a restaurant in La Jolla a long time. It's head on the menu.
Like an actual head of a pig, and they bring it out.
And the entire thing, except for the teeth, which were still in there, was edible.
Teeth.
You could
just like a fork and like
a spoon. You could just dig it out.
And sesos is brain.
Yeah.
Sesos, that's what brain is, yeah.
I had escargot, snails.
I've had that. Delicious. Loved it. It was a little earthy, but I had it my birthday last year.
We're more Dietz and Watson people than Boar's Head people, probably.
Why? Dietz and Watson?
Why Dietz and Watson? Simply the best. Who's going to eat a big old boar's head? It always domes me out when they have they bring out the whole fish on a tray. Oh, yeah. I don't want to do that. I don't want that. Just fillet it for me.
With tail and
the eyes and the whole thing. I don't want it.
Usually like a whole branzino or something
now,
like that.
The nastiest thing I've ever seen was in the show Billions, and it's called Balut. And somebody just brought it up in the chat. And you have to put a towel over your head to eat it or something.
They used to eat that on Fear Factor as well. Remember that show?
Isn't it like a bird?
It's like an egg in it with the... Yeah,
Developing egg embryo that is boiled or steamed and eaten from the shell.
It could, like in Pulp Fiction, it could taste like pumpkin pie. I would never know because I'd never eat the filthy ever. That's good. I'm proud of you for eating those, dude. You've now turned into like Stunt Boy on our show.
I don't want to be
after
Stunt
six
Boy.
Years.
I really don't.
Ben Stunt Boy Higgins.
You know, insects are actually a very common food product around the world.
Absolutely.
It's only here that we kind of have turned them into something that seems like it's gross, but it is a common source of protein for many people around the world. And really, there was nothing that off-putting other than the way it looks. When you eat it. I mean, nothing. It wasn't great. I'm not going to say that, I love it and it's my favorite food now, but in terms of just a crunchy little snack, not bad at all.
Well, I'm happy that you at least enjoyed your present.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For bringing me.
I was thinking about you.
Crickets and...
Oh, Squirrely says try lutefisk. I've had lutefisk. It's disgusting.
Isn't it lutefisk?
Lutefisk.
Lutefisk?
Lutefisk.
Ludacris.
No.
Oh.
That's a rapper.
That's a rapper. What's lutefisk?
It's like a congealed fermented fish of some sort. It's not good. That's a Scandinavian. Delicacy. It's kind of like a jelly texture.
Oh my god! Fish jelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. My buddy invited me to the big family outing, and that it was a tradition or whatever. And he's like, it was a sick place, compound on the lake or whatever. He goes, but you're gonna have to try lutefisk.
People
this
are
weekend.
Fascinated by disgusting things, though. That is absolutely true.
I'm not.
You live right by the San Diego Botanic Gardens.
Yeah.
And they have every couple of years the corpse flower that blooms, and it draws crowds that people want to come and smell this flower, which smells like a rotting dead body. And it only blooms once every two or three years.
Fish.
And they've had two that have bloomed here in the last couple of weeks, and people come from miles and miles around just to see and smell this absolutely repulsive, disgusting corpse flower. People love disgusting things.
I am not one of those people. I have no interest in trying lutefisk or any of that.
You could walk from your house to smell the corpse flower.
Pass. My wife's probably smelled it before.
Probably.
Probably has. It really smells like a dead body.
It does. A rotting dead body.
Sounds hideous.
Durian fruit is something similar. Smells like rotting flesh, but is a delicacy, especially in Asia. People do love it.
No, thank you. No, thank you. No, thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed your treats.
Thanks for remembering us.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much.
We're all even now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All even.
All right. Let's come back. Yeah, we got 1 week plus a day until the trade deadline. Ooh. Talked about some of the rumors, but things are supposed to be heating up here in the next couple of days. So talk about that, and then we'll have Sammy joining us, Sam Levitt, after the weekend, covering the Padres and the Guardians, coming up here with Ben and Woods after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Can't really approach any discussion about the trade deadline without a quick look at the standings to try to figure out which teams are buyers and which teams are sellers right now.
There's a few hybrids as well, I
yeah,
believe.
It's a little more clear in the American League, where the wild card race, the Twins, the Yankees are first, and then the Twins and Royals are tied for the second and third spots. And then the Red Sox game out, Seattle Mariners 2.5 games out. After that, the Tampa Bay Rays are a game above 500, which in the National League would put them right in the middle of it, but they're 4.5 games out, and the reports over the weekend are that the Rays are kind of planning to be both buyers and sellers. They're willing to sell for the right price, but they also wouldn't mind picking up a piece or two, so kind of riding the fence. And then everyone below that is probably a seller. The Tigers have not been bad. They're just two games under 500. Again, in the National League, they might be in it. Six games out in the American League, though, they may be looking to sell. Everyone below that, Rangers, Blue Jays, and of course, Angels, A's, White Sox, probably sellers. The National League is still it's only getting tighter. Somehow the tightest wild card race you're ever going to see is even closer now. The Braves lead. The Cardinals are 2.5 games behind the Braves. And then the Mets, Diamondbacks, and Padres are all in a virtual tie right now for the third wild card spot. The Mets have the percentage point lead, but it's very close. They're all two games above 500. And then the Pirates are just a half game out. So, I mean, you know, the Pirates would love to sell and be cheap and do what they do, but they're too close to sell at this point, I think.
If you look at the NL wild card, Ben, there's two teams that are out of it. Two. The Rockies and the Marlins.
Right.
That's it.
And
everybody else is Literally in it. The Reds are 4 out. The Nationals 4 out. Cubs 3.5.
It's funny how everybody's in it, yet there's really only one team that scares you in the National League.
In the wild card.
No, I just mean in general.
Oh, the Phillies. Yeah.
But everybody's in it.
Everyone's in it. They scare the crap out of me.
But it also feels like it's kind of an open contest right now, minus the Phillies. Like, that's the team to beat.
They're a terrifying baseball
team. I mean, had the Cubs lost and got swept by the Diamondbacks yesterday, that might have changed their course a little bit, but they did pull out a win in extra innings in their 3.5, so they're kind of still riding the fence as well. The Nationals probably would have been out of it until they swept the Reds. The Reds probably would have been in it until they got swept by the Nationals, so those teams are now both 4 games out.
So this is a huge series against the Nats.
Yeah.
Huge.
And,
massive.
And, but that also means there's tons of buyers. The Atlanta Braves, who lost Ozzie Albies to 8 weeks with a broken wrist, have acted quickly and cheaply, picking up the waived Whit Merrifield this morning to just try to fill in kind of as a utility guy.
Fill the gap.
But that doesn't mean they're not still interested in adding bodies. With both Acuna and Albies out now for significant periods of time, they probably want to pick up a bat. They've had tons of pitching injuries. I mean, they're not. We did our roundtable last week, and I said, I don't think the Braves are necessarily as solidly in as everybody thinks with all the injuries they've had. And now with another big one, if they don't land a player or two at the deadline, they could find themselves falling off. I mean, Schwellenbach, who shut down the Padres, he got lit up yesterday by the Cardinals. They dropped 2 of 3 to St. Louis over the weekend. They could find themselves slipping pretty fast without staunching the bleeding a little bit. So none of these teams are completely safe, and none of them other than the Rockies and Marlins are out of it in the National League.
It's crazy. Yeah, and we were just talking about the Pirates. Somebody in the chat goes, yeah, the Pirates just took a series from the Phillies this weekend.
Yep.
So
they had won 6 in a row until yesterday, so they're right back in it.
They're right back in this thing. And, yeah, I mean, you know who's the most angry about that is Bob Nutting. He's furious. He's furious. He wants them off a cliff ASAP. He wants them absolutely off a cliff. Don't want to have to do anything. Don't want to have to spend any money. Don't want to have to add additional payroll. People are finally excited about the Pittsburgh Pirates, his team that he's the owner of, and I'm sure he's furious that that they're actually winning series right now.
But that makes this market, and now again, we're just 8 days away from the trade deadline, still extremely muddled as to, you know, who is available.
So what's
and
your
what
plan?
The price tag is going to be.
What's your... If you're AJ, like, what's the proper course of action? You know, listen, the Braves had a need. They filled it with a guy that had been DFA'd, right? And that's not to say they're
AJ would be killed probably for doing
that. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
If that was the solution here at the deadline, we'll just pick up a pitcher who's been DFA'd, you go, well, then you're not even trying to win. But the Braves are clearly trying to win.
Sure.
And their first move is to grab a guy who's been DFA'd.
Yeah, yeah, to replace Ozzie Albies for at least 2 months. I mean, that's a long time. It's a lot of games. I don't know. I mean, I know for a fact AJ Preller's working the phones pretty hard. Do you expect any sort of flurry of moves to happen even this week?
I do. I mean, there's got to be some moves.
Something's got to pop.
The teams that are selling, at some point, they're going to have to cash in on their chips. The Blue Jays, maybe the Rangers, maybe the Tigers. There's going to be some more players that are sold, and right now the price tag is going to be so high it'll be irresistible for those teams to sell. The problem is that AJ can make his best offer. He can make an offer that we think is probably too much for a player like Yusei Kikuchi or even Garrett Crochet, and they could still say no, because guess what, this other team is willing to offer even a ridiculously amount more than you are
to
get this player right now.
As Satan's Blowfish says in the chat, you can grab guys off waivers when you have enough depth in other spots to weather it. That's the thing I think about the San Diego Padres, and especially in our biggest need, arms. We don't have enough depth to pick up a, you know, Dallas Keuchel or something. You know, like, there's just not nearly enough depth to add spare parts. It doesn't have to be necessarily a frontline guy. Frankly, I don't know that you'd want to pay the price for a Skubal or a Garrett Crochet. I don't know that you want to pay that asking price, but you'd probably make an offer on both of those guys, and if it's not enough, it's not enough, and you move on.
So do you guys think if you had to put money on it right now, what, 8 days away from the trade deadline. Does AJ make another blockbuster trade, like for a Crochet, a Scooble, or is it kind of fringe moves?
I'm going to say middle of the road, where last year was
a couple of prospects you didn't really know anything about.
Last year was your typical, you know, you buy on the margins, the fringes. I think this is going to be somewhere more in the middle. My opinion, you can't really do the Rich Hill G-Man Choi this year, but you also can't do the Juan Soto either. So I think somewhere in the middle, and listen, there's, you know, somebody mentioned in the chat, I love the guy, I hope he doesn't leave, but I know it's probably a foregone conclusion that Ha-Sung Kim, there's a good chance he's traded. What would the Atlanta Braves give you for Ha-Sung Kim?
I don't know if there's there's a good chance he's traded, but you have to at least talk
to teams that
are interested in Ha-Sung Kim. I think Paulie expecting the top of the market purchase.
Me neither.
They've already made two.
Huge. If those guys were picked up at the deadline, Scooball
is the price tag would be insanely high, and Crochet, you just don't know if he's got any innings left, and he's not worth what is going to be asked
for.
God,
he's nasty.
So I think I circle the trio of Yusei Kikuchi, Nick Martinez now, and Tyler Anderson is probably kind of the level of where the Padres are going for, and you're going to have to overpay for any one of those three guys as well to get them because of the market. But it would be more than just a, you know, we remember what happened in 2021. When they didn't have enough pitching and they had to just go onto the scrap heap, and who did they get? Vince Velasquez and
Jake Arrieta.
I mean, you can't go down that road again, but you can't necessarily go top of the market either. So hopefully one of those three guys play all those three teams against each other. Hey, this is my best offer. Whoever calls me back first, a la Moneyball, I'll take your player and you get my prospect package.
But there is, again, I'll hammer it home, there is an absolute unequivocal need to add right now. Right now. As soon as possible, before next Tuesday, a starting pitcher and a reliever.
And if you're throwing a bullpen arm as well, even better.
Yep.
Probably almost just as important.
Got to happen.
All right, we'll take a timeout. Sammy Leavitt, we had him off last week for the All-Star break, so we will catch up with in-season Sammy. Covered the weekend series against the Cleveland Guardians. He will join us. His Padres thoughts coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. This hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by California Coast Credit Union. Get 9.5% APR rate on a 5-month certificate for a limited time at Cal Coast Credit Union as we celebrate 95 years in the community. $500 minimum balance. Restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA. Visit calcocu.org/celebrate. We've got some tickets to give away coming up in our final hour to see comedian Sebastian Maniscalco at Viejas Arena next month. That is coming up, but we got Sammy Leavitt standing by. In-season Sammy will join us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
I always feel bad bugging Sammy on his off days.
Today's an off day.
He just had an all-star break.
He just had a break, and
if I understand correctly, he was getting so bored that he started appearing with other shows and was just aimlessly driving the coastline based on his social media pictures. Sammy, how was your all-star break?
That is pretty much what I was doing on Thursday, aimlessly driving the coastline. But it is a beautiful coastline.
It is.
It was a nice drive, but it was nice. I had some family here. It was my dad's 65th birthday over the All-Star break, so we actually had an Airbnb in Encinitas. My brother came down from L.A. We all stayed together for a few days, so that was very nice and a really nice way to spend the break, and it lined up really well with the days off. And you're right, they could not keep me out of the studio. Even came in and did the afternoon show for a couple of hours, which was fine and kind of worked out the radio muscles for a few days. But a very nice break and a good weekend for the Padres.
You were in Ben and Woods territory in Encinitas and didn't say a thing to us.
Yeah, I mean, I was out of town. But
No, he was there during the All-Star break, right?
Oh, during the break.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't like I was like roaming there alone. I had
you had your family.
I apologize. I should have hit you up. I will tell you where we went. Where we went for meals. Where did we go? We went to La Papagayo one night.
Great.
We went to Bird's Eye Kitchen.
Good tie.
One night.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah, we went to, where else did we go? Oh. We went to somewhere in Carlsbad. We went to, I can't remember what the place was called in Carlsbad. We did go to Cali Cream for ice cream.
Delicious.
Which was very good.
It's very rich.
One night.
Good
and yeah, we had a good time. So I apologize. I did not invite you to the birthday festivities. That was an oversight on my part.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't have gone, but it's always nice to get invited, Sammy. I don't really like to go to anything, but I do like to be invited. I do.
But then, then you feel awkward when you say no.
Then I feel bad when I say no.
Here is the truth, though. At one point during my dad's visit, I did mention how you two lived up there.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about San Diego and how people, you know, work in different places. A lot of people live up here. And I said, Ben and Woods, my dad is a big-time Ben and Woods listener. I'm sure he will listen to this segment in particular at some point today. He is aware that you guys live up there, so he did know he was in Ben and Woods territory.
Well, happy birthday to your dad. I'm sure he is. I mean, listen, if you raised Sammy Levitt, you can pat yourself on the back that you did a really, really nice job. I know you were excited to get back to baseball. We all were. It was like a loss inside of us. And then the game rolls around Friday night, and boom, 7-0 loss. I mean, just as putrid of a performance as you could give, and it didn't feel great coming out of the break.
Three hits, just
Tanner Bibee just shoving on you all night. How did that first post game show go?
Yeah, it felt very much like how the first half ended. That was certainly the most concerning part about Friday night, was the fact that offensively they picked up right where they left off, and I don't mean that in a very good way. Now, the good part about Friday night was Matt Waldron was really good, and Yuki Matsui actually looked really good, and then the game got away late. But yeah, it didn't leave a great taste in your mouth Friday night when they come out of the break, and offensively it was the same thing we saw at the very end of the first half, where they just weren't doing things they did pretty well for the most part in the first 90 games or so, and that's stringing hits together, that's creating beginnings, that's, you know, for the most part, especially early in the first half, winning on the road, doing those things on the road, and then obviously they were able to turn it around Saturday and Sunday. But no doubt, Friday did not feel very good and was sort of a continuation of what we saw right before the break, especially offensively.
Tell you what concerned me, Sam, and I, you know, when I watch a team like the Guardians, I always look, okay, what makes this team so good?
Yep.
Why did they have the best record in the American League at the All-Star break? It certainly isn't their starting pitching. Jesse pointed it out a number of times. Probably worst starting pitching in baseball. Okay, how do you have such a good record? Well, they got a decent lineup. Padres pitchers did a great job shutting them down, though. They kept Stephen Kwan and Jose Ramirez in check for most of the series. So where is the difference? And it's clearly in the bullpen. They have a dominant bullpen where the Padres have a stressfully, you know,
adequate sometimes,
not other times bullpen. And it just shows you what a huge difference that can make. When they have a lead, they're not going to give it up. And the Padres are pretty good at holding the leads. The difference is when you're down one, they're going to keep it there for the most part. They didn't on Saturday, but you know what? They did yesterday. They gave themselves a chance to win. They didn't come back and win it, but they could have, and they've done it many times this season. And to me, that's the difference right there with the Padres. There's going to be too many games where they're not giving themselves a chance to win because they don't have a deep enough bullpen like the Guardians.
Well, look, even, and you make a fair point, Ben, even with the good of this weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and a lot of that was due to how terrific Dylan Cease and then Michael King were. And if those two guys are going to pitch anywhere close to that level, that's a big deal for this team. And that's a really great thing. And especially if you throw Waldron in the mix. Look, the starting pitching was great this weekend. If they get that level of starting pitching, that's awesome. But what Friday night, back to the first game of the series, again, what it did magnify, and I know you guys were talking about it right before the break, it magnified one way or another, whether that's via a trade or that's, I'm certain they are going to get some sort of reliever in here, but even beyond that, it magnified the need one way or another to be able to rely on somebody or two guys outside of Estrada, Morahone, and Suarez to get outs in big spots. I mean, look, you go to Stephen Kolick in the eighth inning, and that's just a 1-0 game on Friday night. And I know they have Emmanuel Clase waiting in the bullpen. He's no easy task. But, hey, it's a 1-0 game in the eighth inning, and you're trying to give yourself at least a chance in the top of the ninth inning to tie or take a lead. And, obviously, things sort of unraveled in that eighth inning, and the game got totally away. So, to your point, Ben, Friday night was a game where it magnified, whether that's a Yuki Matsui, who was actually really good on Friday night, but whether it's a Stephen Kolek, whether it's an Aniel De Los Santos, whether it is somebody via a trade in the next week or so, yeah, it magnified that a bullpen in 2024, especially as we get later in the season, yeah, you need more than three guys that you can really look at and rely on to go get some big outs and big spots. And Friday night did reveal that, and it makes the next week or so that much more interesting because there's clearly a pretty glaring need in that pen.
I mean, it was interesting, and there's a guy on Twitter, Letters to AJ. He writes a really good blog on Substack. I read it every week, and one came out this morning right before the show started, and it talks about that Friday night game. And I got some DMs about it as well, and essentially, Sammy, it was like, man, kind of a defeatist attitude of going with Kolek there instead of a higher leverage guy, because you know you've got Class A coming up. You also know
Schilt literally told us on Friday that he had graduated to more higher leverage situations.
Right.
And that was before that game.
And it doesn't get much higher leverage than that one, right? And so the game was shot, didn't work out, but he was able to preserve Estrada and Suarez for kind of when he really needed him. I kind of scratched my head in game two going to Estrada, but six pitches, I think, and he gets out of it. You know, listen, they get paid to know a lot more than us, but I was ultimately pretty surprised by that move on Friday night.
Well, I think, you know, and I took calls about it on Friday night, I think the easy second guessing is obviously, hey, it's only a one-run game. You do have the off day on Monday. You don't know what Saturday and Sunday are going to bring anyway. So why not use one of your main two setup guys in Estrada or Morejon in a one-run game,
right,
even though you're not winning? You're losing. I totally understand it. With that said, I did see the reasoning on Friday, or, you know, I saw reason as to why you would say, okay, Kolek, even though he gave up the home run to Darnold in the game on Sunday before the first half ended, had been really good before that. They're trying to find an arm or two that they can rely on to go get outs, and giving him that opportunity in a one-run game, it didn't work out, right? Because the game got away and the inning got away. I understood the reasoning after the game. I also understand, you know, from a fan perspective of like, hey, it's a one-run game. You got to try to keep it a one-run game, and you have the off day on Monday. They tried it with Kolek, and it didn't work out. But, you know, like I was saying in the previous answer, I kind of get it because they need sort of desperately to be able to turn to somebody else outside of those three. I guess what I'm saying is I didn't hate that moment trailing to try to get those three outs with Kolek and see if you could kind of graduate him to that sort of spot. It's a tough spot for a manager. It really, really is when, you know, maybe you don't feel like you have that fourth, fifth guy you can turn to in that big spot and go get outs in a consistent way. But they again, goes back to this, whether it's via trade or it's via guys stepping up, they need it desperately down the stretch in these final 60-plus games.
Well, and it's like this. I try to put myself in his shoes, and I thought to myself, I would have all, what do I always say? Make moves that you can save your ass, right? Like, and that you can't manage that way. Mike Schilt can't live that way. Make moves that you can say, well, of course I went to Jeremiah Estrada. We're only down one. I have faith in my team that we can score off the best relief, right? Like, that's the easy move. Mike Schilt did not make the easy move. I got a DM on Friday night. It says, I know Class A's good, but with 2-3-4 up with a rested pen and days off upcoming, you don't throw Morejon, Estrada. I said, makes no sense. Unless they win the next two, then he's a genius. He says, four in the ninth, you're just using one inning of Morejon to have Estrada and Suarez rested the next 2 days. They're going to use their top three pitchers. I wish they would have saved one for the Nats. And he said, now they don't even have to use Class A because they scored so many off of Kolek.
Now, they did use Class A in a 2-1 deficit yesterday.
Correct.
Like the Padres didn't do on Friday with Estrada.
Correct. So it's just, again, a move that I didn't get that is, I'm glad I didn't spout off about it because it would have blown up in
but
my
face. But ultimately, they didn't score.
Right.
So it was the right move,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Right. And also, just to kind of push it a point further, when you really think about it, if you look at Saturday's game, the score was 3-0 heading into that top of the eighth inning, okay? If the Padres don't score in the eighth inning there, guess who's coming in all likelihood regardless, right? I know Estrada ended up coming in anyway,
yeah.
But then it's definitely Estrada in a 3-run game, and if you're still leading 3-0 heading into the ninth inning, it's Suarez. So
yep.
Look, there was a world where it could have worked out where it was, you know, you tried Kolick on the Friday, and it ended up being in two close games late and save situations late. You had to go to Estrada and Suarez on Saturday and Sunday. Now, the devil's advocate to that is like, well, you still didn't end up using Morejon, right? So he certainly could have pitched that eighth inning on Friday.
Yeah.
Again, I understand the second guessing. I understand the other side of it. I also sort of understand the thinking of trying to graduate somebody, just like they've done with Morejon and Estrada.
Absolutely, they have.
Hey,
absolutely.
You got to do that sometimes in your bullpen. So I get, you know, not to kind of avoid it, but I do understand both sides of the argument, and they both have real, I think, valid points.
Well, and it friggin' worked at the end of the day.
Before you go, Sam Levitt, I'm looking in the chat here, and I need to ask, do you have a fan club, and are they called the Levitators?
Oh, that's genius.
I don't think so. I've seen that. I've seen that in the YouTube chat a little bit. I really.
This hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by California Coast Credit Union. Get 9.5% APR rate on a 5-month certificate for a limited time at Cal Coast Credit Union as we celebrate 95 years in the community. $500 minimum balance. Restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA. Visit calcocu.org/celebrate. We've got some tickets to give away coming up in our final hour to see comedian Sebastian Maniscalco at Viejas Arena next month. That is coming up, but we got Sammy Levitt standing by. In-season Sammy will join us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
I always feel bad bugging Sammy on his off days.
Today's an off day.
He just had an all-star break.
He just
and if I understand correctly, he was getting so bored that he started appearing with other shows and was just aimlessly driving the coastline based on his social media pictures. Sammy, how was your all-star break?
That is pretty much what I was doing on Thursday, aimlessly driving the coastline. But it is a beautiful coastline.
It is.
It was a nice drive, but it was nice. I had some family here. It was my dad's 65th birthday over the All-Star break. So we actually had an Airbnb in Encinitas. My brother came down from L.A. We all stayed together for a few days, so that was very nice and a really nice way to spend the break, and it lined up really well with the days off. And you're right, they could not keep me out of the studio. They even came in and did the afternoon show for a couple of hours, which was fine and kind of worked out the radio muscles for a few days. But a very nice break and a good weekend for the Padres.
You were in Ben and Woods territory in Encinitas and didn't say a thing to us.
I mean, I was out of town. But
No, he was there during the All-Star break, right?
Oh, during the break.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't like I was like roaming there alone. I had
you had your family.
I apologize. I should have hit you up. I will tell you where we went. Where we went for meals. Where did we go? We went to La Papagayo one night.
Great.
We went to Bird's Eye Kitchen.
Good tie.
One night.
Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, we went to, where else did we go? Oh. We went to somewhere in Carlsbad. We went to, I can't remember what the place was called in Carlsbad. We did go to Cali Cream for ice cream.
Delicious.
Which was very good.
It's very rich.
One night.
Good
and we had a good time. So I apologize. I did not invite you to the birthday festivities. That was an oversight on my part.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't have gone, but it's always nice to get invited, Sammy. I don't really like to go to anything, but I do like to be invited. I do.
But then, you know what? Then you feel awkward when you say no.
Then I feel bad when I say no.
Here is the truth, though. At one point during my dad's visit, I did mention how you two lived up there.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about San Diego and how people, you know, work in different places. A lot of people live up here. And I said Ben and Woods. My dad is a big-time Ben and Woods listener. I'm sure he will listen to this segment in particular at some point today. He is aware that you guys live up there, so he did know he was in Ben and Woods territory.
Well, happy birthday to your dad. I'm sure he is. I mean, listen, if you raised Sammy Levitt, you can pat yourself on the back that you did a really, really nice job. I know you were excited to get back to baseball. We all were. It was like a loss inside of us. And then the game rolls around Friday night, and boom, 7-0 loss. I mean, just as putrid of a performance as you could give, and it felt. It didn't feel great coming out of the break.
Three hits, just
Tanner Bibee just shoving on you all night. How did that first post game show go?
Yeah, it felt very much like how the first half ended. That was certainly the most concerning part about Friday night, was the fact that offensively they picked up right where they left off, and I don't mean that in a very good way. Now, the good part about Friday night was Matt Waldron was really good, and Yuki Matsui actually looked really good, and then the game got away late. But yeah, it didn't leave a great taste in your mouth Friday night when they come out of the break, and offensively it was the same thing we saw at the very end of the first half, where they just weren't doing things they did pretty well for the most part in the first 90 games or so, and that's stringing hits together, that's creating beginnings, that's, you know, for the most part, especially early in the first half, winning on the road, doing those things on the road. And then obviously they were able to turn it around Saturday and Sunday. But no doubt, Friday did not feel very good, and was sort of a continuation of what we saw right before the break, especially offensively.
Tell you what concerned me, Sam, and I, you know, when I watch a team like the Guardians, I always look, okay, what makes this team so good?
Yep. Well,
why did they have the best record in the American League at the All-Star break? It certainly isn't their starting pitching. Jesse pointed it out a number of times. Probably worst starting pitching in baseball. Okay, how do you have such a good record? Well, they got a decent lineup. Padres pitchers did a great job shutting them down, though. They kept Stephen Kwan and Jose Ramirez in check for most of the series. So where is the difference? And it's clearly in the bullpen. They have a dominant bullpen where the Padres have a stressfully, you know,
adequate sometimes,
not other times, bullpen. And it just shows you what a huge difference that can make. When they have a lead, they're not going to give it up. And the Padres are pretty good at holding the leads. The difference is when you're down one, they're going to keep it there for the most part. They didn't on Saturday, but you know what? They did yesterday. They gave themselves a chance to win. They didn't come back and win it, but they could have, and they've done it many times this season. And to me, that's the difference right there with the Padres. There's going to be too many games where they're not giving themselves a chance to win because they don't have a deep enough bullpen like the Guardians.
Well, look, even, and you make a fair point, Ben, even with the good of this weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and a lot of that was due to how terrific Dylan Cease and then Michael King were. And if those two guys are going to pitch anywhere close to that level, that's a big deal for this team. And that's a really great thing. And especially if you throw Waldron in the mix. Look, the starting pitching was great this weekend. If they get that level of starting pitching, that's awesome. But what Friday night, back to the first game of the series, again, what it did magnify, and I know you guys were talking about it right before the break, it magnified one way or another, whether that's via a trade or that's, I'm certain they are going to get some sort of reliever in here, but even beyond that, it magnified the need one way or another to be able to rely on somebody or two guys outside of Estrada, Morahone, and Suarez to get outs in big spots. I mean, look, you go to Stephen Kolick in the eighth inning, and that's just a 1-0 game on Friday night. And I know they have Emmanuel Clase waiting in the bullpen. He's no easy task. But, hey, it's a 1-0 game in the eighth inning, and you're trying to give yourself at least a chance in the top of the ninth inning to tie or take a lead. And obviously things sort of unraveled in that eighth inning, and the game got totally away. So to your point, Ben, Friday night was a game where it magnified, whether that's a Yuki Matsui, who was actually really good on Friday night, but whether it's a Stephen Kolick, whether it's an Aniel De Los Santos, whether it is somebody via a trade in the next week or so, yeah, it magnified that a bullpen in 2024, especially as we get later in the season, yeah, you need more than three guys that you can really look at and rely on to go get some big outs and big spots. And Friday night did reveal that, and it makes the next week or so that much more interesting because there's clearly a pretty glaring need in that pen.
I mean, it was interesting, and there's a guy on Twitter, Letters to AJ. He writes a really good blog on Substack. I read it every week, and one came out this morning right before the show started, and it talks about that Friday night game. And I got some DMs about it as well, and essentially, Sammy, it was like, man, kind of a defeatist attitude of going with Kolek there instead of a higher leverage guy, because you know you've got Class A coming up. You also know
Schilt literally told us on Friday that he had graduated to more higher leverage situations.
Right.
And that was before that game.
And it doesn't get much higher leverage than that one, right? And so the game was shot, didn't work out, but he was able to preserve Estrada and Suarez for kind of when he really needed him. I kind of scratched my head in game two going to Estrada, but six pitches, I think, and he gets out of it. You know, listen, they get paid to know a lot more than us, but I was ultimately pretty surprised by that move on Friday night.
Well, I think, you know, and I took calls about it on Friday night, I think the easy second guessing is obviously, hey, it's only a one-run game. You do have the off day on Monday. You don't know what Saturday and Sunday are going to bring anyway. So why not use one of your main two setup guys in Estrada or Morejon in a one-run game,
right,
even though you're not winning? You're losing. I totally understand it. With that said, I did see the reasoning on Friday, or, you know, I saw reason as to why you would say, okay, Kolek, even though he gave up the home run to Darnold in the game on Sunday before the first half ended, had been really good before that. They're trying to find an arm or two that they can rely on to go get outs, and giving him that opportunity in a one-run game, it didn't work out, right? Because the game got away and the inning got away. I understood the reasoning after the game. I also understand, you know, from a fan perspective of like, hey, it's a one-run game. You got to try to keep it a one-run game, and you have the off day on Monday. They tried it with Kolek, and it didn't work out. But, you know, like I was saying in the previous answer, I kind of get it because they need sort of desperately to be able to turn to somebody else outside of those three. I guess what I'm saying is I didn't hate that moment trailing to try to get those three outs with Kolek and see if you could kind of graduate him to that sort of spot. It's a tough spot for a manager. It really, really is when, you know, maybe you don't feel like you have that fourth, fifth guy you can turn to in that big spot and go get outs in a consistent way. But they again, goes back to this, whether it's via trade or it's via guy stepping up, they need it desperately down the stretch in these final 60-plus games.
Well, it's like this. I try to put myself in his shoes, and I thought to myself, I would have what do I always say? Make moves that you can save your ass, right? Like, and that you can't manage that way. Mike Schilt can't live that way. Make moves that you can say, well, of course I went to Jeremiah Estrada. We're only down one. I have faith in my team that we can score off the best relief, right? Like, that's the easy move. Mike Schilt did not make the easy move. I got a DM on Friday night. It says, I know Class A's good, but with 2-3-4 up with a rested pen and days off upcoming, you don't throw Morejon, Estrada. I said, makes no sense. Unless they win the next two, then he's a genius. He says, four in the ninth, you're just using one inning of Morejon to have Estrada and Suarez rested the next 2 days. They're going to use their top three pitchers. I wish they would have saved one for the Nats. And he said, now they don't even have to use Class A because they scored so many off of Kolek.
Now, they did use Class A in a 2-1 deficit yesterday.
Correct.
Like the Padres didn't do on Friday with Estrada.
Correct. So it's just, again, a move that I didn't get that is, I'm glad I didn't spout off about it because it would have blown up in
but
my
face. But ultimately, they didn't score.
Right.
So it was the right move, apparently.
Yeah.
Right. And also, just to kind of push it a point further, when you really think about it, if you look at Saturday's game, the score was 3-0 heading into that top of the eighth inning, okay? If the Padres don't score in the eighth inning there, guess who's coming in all likelihood regardless, right? I know Estrada ended up coming in anyway, but then it's definitely Estrada in a 3-run game, and if you're still leading 3-0 heading into the ninth inning, it's Suarez. So look, there was a world where it could have worked out where it was, you know, you tried Kolek on the Friday, and it ended up being in two close games late and saved situations late. You had to go to Estrada and Suarez on Saturday and Sunday. Now, the devil's advocate to that is like, well, you still didn't end up using Morejon, right? So he certainly could have pitched that eighth inning on Friday.
Yeah.
Again, I understand the second guessing. I understand the other side of it. I also sort of understand the thinking of trying to graduate somebody, just like they've done with Morejon and Estrada.
Absolutely, they have.
Hey,
absolutely.
You got to do that sometimes in your bullpen. So I get, you know, not to kind of avoid it, but I do understand both sides of the argument, and they both have real, I think, valid points.
Well, and it friggin' worked at the end of the day.
Before you go, Sam Levitt, I'm looking in the chat here, and I need to ask, do you have a fan club, and are they called the Levitators?
Oh, that's genius.
I don't think so. I've seen that. I've seen that in the YouTube chat a little bit. Nobody has ever come up to me and said that in person, so I really don't think so. Now, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, because I wouldn't say there's any sort of Levitators fan club, and that's fine, but my fan club is nothing like the Scrabinator fan club.
The Scrabinator,
I don't know if you guys have experienced the Scrabinator. Do you know that he's doing a second Scrabinator night at the ballpark where I don't have all the details in front of me, but where he's going to have another night where he has his followers and supporters that call themselves Scrabinators at the ballpark.
So I Scrabinators, Levitators. Can we do the Ben and Woodsinators?
Ben and Woodsinators?
Just get rid of the tier ones. Yeah.
How about just the Woodsinators? That's a better ring to it. The Beninators. Yeah. No, but it's backed by popular demand.
They're called
the tier ones.
The tier ones. You know what's really interesting is as you were saying that, I was thinking of your names and I thought of Ben Higgins. Why everybody calls Higashiyoke
Higgy.
Nobody calls Ben
Higgins. Mark Grant and Mark Loretta.
That's it.
Both call me Higgy.
That's
and those are the only two. Those are the two.
He's Ben Higgy.
You know what? That is unsurprising, because if there's one thing I've learned in working in baseball for like a decade now, baseball players and the baseball culture, they love a nickname.
Throw an E on it.
And as we've learned with Mike Schilt, you throw an E on it and you're good. Like I'm kind of shocked nobody called me and they've never done it. Nobody called me Levy.
Levy.
Well, they do call you Sammy.
It's already Sammy, so.
Sam, have a good
baseball players love a nickname.
Enjoy the rest of your day off. Tomorrow, Eco Water SoCal pregame show, I believe, 2:45 against
2:45,
the Washington Nationals. Fairly early start for an afternoon game. We will hear from you again then. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. See ya.
There's some great nicknames in here. The Beninites.
The Beninites. Like the Mennonites, but the Beninites.
The Rindle Holics. Probably not a good idea.
Probably not a good one for
you. Yeah, not a good one for you.
But hey, a lot of great ideas. A
lot of great ideas.
Glad you brought those up.
They're the tier ones. We already have a name for our listeners. We don't need to come up with a new one. We're good.
There's a lot of great ideas in here. Second one.
The Rindleholics. No, that's not good. I'm just glad it wasn't my idea, and it was I Need Money's idea. Okay? Don't shoot the messenger, Paul.
The Ryan Addicts.
Well, that doesn't work either, Ben.
All right, we'll come back. We've got some Sebastian Maniscalco tickets to give away. Paulie's got some more headlines in the Rindle Report, all coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.